I woke up one morning, I looked in the mirror and I said, wow, if I don't make a change right now, I'm going to be here the rest of my life, always talking about what I should have done, what I could have been, what, you know, and I looked at myself and said, wow, your father's legacy is you. And so if you don't make this change immediately, you're going to continue to basically, you're not only going to kill yourself and in your life early, you're going to end up not continuing your father's legacy as you live on. So that really got me thinking about how I need to turn my life around, you know, at that point.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Ask Me How I Know show. I am so excited to have you listening. And if you haven't already hit and smash that subscribe, follow, like, because they're always changing the name of that button. If you haven't already done that, take a moment to take care of that so you never miss another amazing episode, because you don't want to miss amazing guests like the guests I have on the show today. Marcus Ogden. I always butcher the last name. I had classmates that had your same last name, so I apologize. Marcus, welcome to Ask Me How I Know.
Thank you for having me. Welcome. Thanks. Appreciate you. How are you doing today?
I am doing rip-roaring awesome. And I'll tell you, when I was doing prep work for podcast recording today, I was so over the moon excited about this exact time, this session. Out of all the recordings, I'm not just saying this, I'm excited about all the other guests, but I was like, your story is so powerful. And I know that it's a story that resonates with a lot of people. So if you don't mind, I don't want to give your story away, but if you could give us maybe just like a brief introduction as to who you are context wise, and then let's dive into your story.
So my name is Marcus Ogden. I am a national, international keynote speaker, executive coach, corporate consultant, best-selling author. I am the co-host of the Lev and Marcus podcast, and I am a former NFL athlete that now lives in Raleigh, North Carolina.
That is amazing. So his credentials are awesome. Amazing. Obviously, they speak for themselves, but what I really appreciate is that you're with all of those credentials, as we'll call them, right? You are so human and down to earth and relatable. And I think sometimes there can be a disconnect, and your story is so powerful and everything you went through. I've been speaking a lot on the podcast about how we have to be prepared to deal with success. And when I was reading through your story, not to give it away for everybody, but you know, you see someone who has a lot of success and then you just, well, maybe I should let you tell the story. And if you don't mind, can I ask questions along the way?
Always. Absolutely.
Awesome.
So I'm from Washington, D.C. I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C. I was drafted out of Howard to the National Football League, to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I was Jack Del Rio's first draft class. Jack is now the defensive coordinator for the Washington football team under Ron Rivera. And I had an amazing almost six-year NFL career. Did a lot of great things, met a lot of great people. Unfortunately, when I left the NFL, though, I had some issues with transition, wasn't prepared for it, wasn't ready for it. I was almost 27 years of age. So for about, and on top of that, I had lost my father the year prior, who was my best friend, who raised my brother and I. So I was dealing with some deep depression, anxiety, stress, alcoholism, painkiller addiction, you know, marijuana addiction. And I was just in a really bad place. And then after about 6 months, Julie, I finally got off my butt and I founded Caden Premier Enterprises, which is a construction company. And I built it to be the largest African-American owned subcontracting company in the city of Baltimore and the state of Maryland for 2 years, an area of site work, utilities, grading, real estate development, et cetera. But unfortunately, as you said a moment ago, I was not prepared to handle that success. I was not ready to handle all the money, the fame, what I call the external motivating factors that really don't make much of a difference. And I got caught up in them and I developed a really big ego. And for me, ego means exaggerated, glorified opinions. I always exaggerated how good I was. I was always chasing glory. And I always had to have the last word to make myself feel like I was the smartest person in the room. And as a result of that, in conjunction with a really bad project, losing about between 2.5 and 3 million, well, excuse me, spending about between $2.5 and $3 million of my own money, and the developer and the general contractor denied my change order. And I tried to get the bank to extend a line of credit, which they did not. We had an investor coming who was going to buy out my partner at the last second. That fell through. February of 2013, I realized that the company was going to be over. So I basically started to pack everything up and I made preparations to move from Baltimore to Raleigh. And April 2013, I got down here to Raleigh with $400 to my name. And I literally had, you know, I filed a Chapter 7 complete bankruptcy. Home was foreclosed on. Both cars repossessed in the same day. And I moved down here not knowing a soul. And that was one big part of my life, of my story. So that's kind of that regard. Got down here to Raleigh, and then I'll tell you about that in a second.
Okay, yeah, because there is so much there. And I just have to go back. Let's go like rewind the message a little bit. And you mentioned that, by the way, I'm sorry about your loss. I lost my dad very unexpectedly 6 years ago, my true north, my favorite person on the planet. And such my like cheerleader and everything. And it's just, that's difficult enough, but you have this loss as you're going through these other major transitions in life. And you mentioned that you found yourself, you know, with a lot of addictions. And so I think that's a really interesting point. Like when we talk about addictions, sometimes we have addictions beforehand and they're friendly addictions. And so we're addicted to water. We're addicted to exercise. We're addicted to, you know, happy endorphins. Like, do you think that that's something that you had before and they just turned into addictions that, what led you into addictions that were destructive? Yeah, and how did you overcome that?
So I definitely had good addictions like playing football, the gym, working out, positive things like that. But what really got me addicted to the bad side was between my father losing, losing his life unexpectedly at the age of 57. That in combination of not having football anymore, having a lot of money with no schedule, a lot of money with a lot of free time and no structure. This led to a really destructive bad behavior pattern where I was just into, you know, again, alcoholism, you know, painkillers, you know, everything bad because I was just in that real downward spiral and I didn't know how to get myself out.
So how did you ultimately get yourself out?
I woke up one morning, I looked in the mirror and I said, wow, if I don't make a change right now, I'm going to be here the rest of my life, always talking about what I should have done, what I could have been, what, you know, and I looked at myself and said, wow, your father's legacy is you. And so if you don't make this change immediately, you're going to continue to basically, you're not only going to kill yourself and in your life early, you're going to end up not continuing your father's legacy as you live on. So that really got me thinking about how I need to turn my life around, you know, at that point.
I can relate to that concept of, you know, so sometimes if I'm struggling with a project or something, I will think, you know, I do want to still make my dad proud. I will always want to make him proud. And there's something to that when you have someone in your life that's so powerful. Sure. So that's really, did you have any support or help or were you, I had a great aunt, smoked a ton of cigarettes for like 80 whatever years and then just quit cold turkey one day, you know, like, were you able to just make a decision because you have so much internal strength or?
So for me, it was just, you know, I realized that, you know, I needed to just, that internal strength got me to the point and said, hey, this is not what I need to be doing. And I just woke up that morning. I said, wow, you know, where you're going, Marcus, is not going to end well. So you've got two choices, either continue to go down this path and gamble with your life or straighten up and hope you've done too much damage to yourself and try to get your life back on track. And that's what I decided to do. And that kind of got me forged forward into my construction business.
So let's talk about those transitions. you know, transitioning from, you know, football into construction. And so here you are, you come out, you wake up and you're a new man, you know, that day, and you have this construction business. It's going well. You've had a lot of success in your life. So tell us a little bit about this construction business. And
so basically, for me, like I started for the wrong reason. I started to chase money and to fill my void of time. Got really lucky, hired some really great people. There was a huge void for not having any minority contractors in the state. And we stepped in. We were able to have the funding, the financing to a certain degree. They had the people, we had the expertise, and we just really got in at the right time with the real estate, the development, the commercial contracts, and we just grew. And we just had a lot of success and a lot of notoriety. We were winning awards and we were contractors of the year and we were, you know, doing all these great things. But looking back on it, the reason that we failed, of course, along with, you know, the fact that I was not prepared for the success we were having, is that we literally were underfunded. We got into something that we should not have when we got into site work and earthwork and dirt moving, which is a very cash heavy, liquidity required business. And we weren't funded that way. And we were kind of piecemealing things. And it was doing all right for a while because we would do jobs and get paid and all that. But once we hit that one snag and we didn't have enough liquidity behind us with, you know, lines of credit and ample cash, it was literally the beginning of the end. And then, you know, probably about 90 days went through and spent all that money, close to between $2 to $3 million. And once the change order was denied by the developer and the contractor, that was it. And then once the, you know, the person who was going to buy us out and, you know, did not come through, and then the bank line ended up saying, we're not going to extend you any more credit. At that time, it was completely over.
How did you manage? That is so much for a person to manage internally, right? I mean, you have this string of successes, you're doing super great. You see the writing on the wall, though. You understand things are a little tenuous, perhaps. And like, how does somebody manage that? Manage specifically, I see that the tower is falling and I am powerless to stop it. Like, as a man, how do you manage?
So really and truly, I didn't really realize until it was completely over, which everybody shut us down, that it was going to happen. I knew we were going down. I knew we were spending money. I knew we were hemorrhaging cash. But I thought between either the developer contract taking care of us, the investors coming to buy out my partner, or the bank extending our line, I said, one of those three has to come through. Well, when all three did not come through, between really, I'll say, so February, I didn't really focus on the failure because I was just trying to pack up and get out of Baltimore because I had so many creditors. I had 177 creditors on my docket, 177, and over $5.5 million of debt. So I was just trying to get out of Baltimore, get down to Raleigh. I got here in April 2013. And I was trying to file the bankruptcy, but I was so broke, Julie, it took me almost 6 months to file because it cost me $3,300, and I didn't have it. I had to pay it off like this month, $400, this month, $500. I mean, I just had to, you know, pay off best I could. This whole time I'm exposed to the bank and to creditors, but I just don't have money to pay it all. So when I got here and was dealing with that and trying to get a job and was working a job and fired from a job and all these different things, that's when it really hit me of how much disaster had really happened. Because when you're in the midst of trying to get out of it, you don't focus on it. Once you're out of it to a certain degree, I wasn't all the way out of it. Once you're out of it and you're saying, wow, what happened? Mm-hmm. That's when I turned again to alcohol, but this time I was dead broke. So it was just cheap Miller Lite beers. And, you know, we were eating out of food pantries and we were, you know, I was, yeah, I went like, so when I got here, I was probably like two 280 because I was stressed out. I lost a lot of weight. But then by the time, as I was April, by the time like July hit, I had gained up to about 330. I gained like 50 pounds in like 3 months.
Wow.
Because I was eating everything bad, but it was cheap, right? And so I could eat. So I could, I was working at Merrill Lynch, but again, that was not going to be a great thing. I was there for a couple months and I got fired. But even at the time of Merrill Lynch, I would literally remember just getting to work, sitting down, doing my work, and just waiting for lunchtime, going to eat a cheap burger, fries, Coke, go back upstairs, sit at my desk, wait to punch out to go home because I just did not like the job. But I tried, but that's why I got fired, because I didn't like it. I wasn't good at it, and I was so far removed from finance that it just wasn't going to work out.
That's amazing. I always marvel at how inexpensive bad food is. it blows my mind. So you end up leaving. I mean, like in my mind, life is giving you the smackdown, and that right there can just completely undo a person. But you're holding on and you're rebuilding. And instead of having this ginormous ego, like your ego is getting the smack down. So you find yourself working as a custodian, correct?
Yep. So I was fired from Merrill Lynch. I was fired from a construction company in the same week. And I was teaching kids football as an entrepreneur, just, private lessons, just trying to make a few bucks, which I did, but it was hard work out in the sun. It was a lot on my body. But that's what it was. And when football season came about and the session started to slow down for my kids, I was training, then I took a job as a custodian making $8.25 an hour working in downtown Raleigh from 10 p.m. till 5 a.m. just to make ends meet.
Wow. Okay. Can we just talk about, like, when you look back on kind of this lifestyle that you had, in Baltimore, and now you have this different lifestyle and everything happening. What evolution took place for you internally?
So when between April 2013 and September, the first part of September 2013, my ego was getting a smackdown. I realized that now, but at the time I still was playing the victim game. Everybody's fault but Marcus. Poor Marcus, the contractor, my partner, the developer, the bank, everybody beat up poor Marcus. When I had that moment as a custodian, it's called my spoiled milk rock bottom moment. Now, having the custodian job was great. I mean, I had the job, I worked the job. I was proud to be able to do something and make money to take care of the family. But that wasn't my rock bottom moment because it was a job. The rock bottom moment was working as a custodian when that trash and rotten meat and spoiled milk of one of the patrons that was where I was working that had a rip on the front side of the bag, which I did not see at 4:30 in the morning, throwing the trash out. That's when I had my rock bottom moment. And at that time, Julie, that's when I said, all right, I'm not going to get out of here playing the victim mode the entire time. It won't happen. And that's when I say enough's enough. And I clean myself off. Of course, after I sat on the curb and cried for about 10 minutes, got home. I remember getting in my F-150 beat up pickup truck that we paid for cash. That was like, I don't know, $1,000. I mean, basically we took almost everything we had to buy that car because we had no other, we only had one car. So that car was 2013. That car was like a 1980s F-150, no air conditioning, ripped out passenger seat, scratched up bed. I used to call it the Green Hornet. And I got in the Green Hornet, drove home, sat down at my chair that was missing one of the rollers, but I couldn't afford to buy another one, a flimsy, broken down desk that was on its last leg. And I said, what am I good at? Wrote down my three biggest strengths. Good at communication, good at wanting to help people, good storyteller. And I said, oh, all right, let's go ahead and be a keynote speaker. If Tony Robbins can do it, why can't I? And that's when I began my speaking career.
Okay, that's amazing that after getting all of the smackdown, Marcus, you're like, Tony Robbins can do this, I can do this. But I tell my kids this all the time, like, we're all human. We are all human. Just because someone else has accomplished something does it, or is like the Tony Robbins-ish, doesn't mean that someone else cannot be that type, that caliber level of person. It's not a zero-sum game, and we're all human. So if you want to be like that, you can. But the strength, the internal strength that you have is extraordinary, because so many people get that smackdown. And it's so often what I notice is like this climb back up, and people, you know, see the sunshine again, and they're very successful, and, you know, kind of have this rebirth in life, if you will. But to be able to sit down in your rock bottom moment and say, this is what I'm good at, and this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm blown away.
That's where I live. And for the first 2.5 years, Julie, I didn't get one paid job. I kept working. Everything was free and this and that. And I finally got my first paid job in April 2016 for Miller Mott College in Wilmington, North Carolina. There, I was their 100th commencement graduation speaker for their graduating class. I got paid $1,500 for a 20-minute talk. Looking back on that talk, I was literally just a mess, and it was horrible, and you know, it was just bad. And I got the job, did the job. They loved me, you know, which I look today, I know how bad I was at the time. It was my first paid job. They didn't know that. And I worked hard, and since then, I've been working harder. I have, you know, got coached, and I've gotten better at my craft, and I, you know, have developed myself and read more, and, you know, I wrote one book in 2015, wrote another book in 2020, both were bestsellers. The second book, The Success Cycle, talks about ambition, drive, and hard work that makes up the essence of the cycle. And, you know, that's a bestseller. Again, like I said earlier, my wife was my ghostwriter. And it's in every Barnes & Noble bookstore across the country, in the business section, all that. All this to say, since 2016 to today, I've continuously worked on my craft. I've perfected my craft. I've evolved. I've made mistakes. I've learned from them. I've gotten better. I have learned that I used to undervalue my pricing. I learned I used to overvalue my pricing. Now I know exactly how to price for my services. And, you know, in the last 5 years, about 5.5 years, I've worked for now 25 Fortune 500 clients, 25. Of the 25, I think 13 are Fortune 100. Some clients like Intel, Home Depot, AXA Equitable, New York Life, MetLife, Cisco, Siemens, Liberty Mutual Insurance, just name a few. And I've, again, written two books, bestsellers, which is thank God for my wife, because I can't write. I also have, you know, I now coach a lot of people. I'm a corporate consultant for a lot of different businesses. I am the co-host of a top 5% most downloaded podcast after only 3 months of being out and published. We're already in the top 5% globally. And, you know, but I'm the same guy that made $8 an hour in 2013. I'm the same guy that had trash over his body and skin and clothes, you know, in 2013. I'm the same guy that was turned down for every paid speaking job for 30 straight months between September 2013 and basically until I got to, you know, the middle of April 2016 when I got my first paid job. Was told no on every single job I went after.
So, and yet you still did it. And you still went after it, which is such amazing resilience. And when you were, you know, what made you flip the switch on being able to adequately value yourself?
I learned from clients and from my coaches what others were charging, what I was charging. And then as I started to do more, and I hope your audience gets this message, this is very important. You need to learn how to what I call improve or create credibility within your archives, which is basically what you do. So like for yourself, if you want to go out, Julie, and get more great sponsors for, you know, the Ask Me How I Know show or podcast, however you want to call it, it's about, okay, what kind of guests do you have? What type of listeners do you have? What's your global download? You know, but again, all that comes from consistency, time, hard work. Our show would not be as popular if our brand of speaking was not as popular, because I have taken that audience and then moving it over to the podcast because it's free value content with great guests with amazing stories. Like today, we're interviewing Johnny Gomes, who was the 2013 World Series champion with the Boston Red Sox. So if you like baseball, you like Boston, you're going to hear Johnny. And he's got a great story about life after and all this type of stuff. But once I learned the value of how to position myself based off the archives and what I've done for speaking and coaching, consulting, and being an author and having a successful podcast, that's when I learned how to value myself at the right, in the right way.
And is that also internally how you valued yourself? Did that have to evolve as well? How you viewed yourself?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. One of my mentors is Mel Robbins.
And she love her.
So I was on her. I was on her global downloaded book. I was on her globally audio downloaded book called Kick Ass with Mel. Met with her in Boston. You know, I talked to her probably once a month. And she calls it the avalanche theory. When everybody is riding you and telling you you're not going to be good, you're not going to be successful, and you have to internalize and find your value from within, but you have to get rid of all the external noise because it feels like everybody's just kind of piled on top of you. So she calls that the avalanche theory. And once you can get by the avalanche theory, you can start to internalize and see that you do have worth, but usually the hardest critic we have to get by is ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree. That's why I was like, did you have to have that mindset shift of like valuing yourself internally and saying like, no, I'm worth it. I'm worth this much money. I have these skills, but sometimes we're even highly, maybe even overqualified for something, but simply just the nature of how we view ourselves disqualifies us.
Oh, it's I just made a note here because I like to take notes from podcasts that I do that I like to kind of share with my audience. When we tend to devalue ourselves, it takes us so much longer to get back on track. And I've learned today, you know, I just signed as a coaching client, a young man, his name is Jared Haben, who was on the 11th season of The Bachelorette. And him and his wife, Ashley, actually met on The Bachelor in Paradise, and they got to know each other off the show. And now they're married, and they just announced probably about a month ago they're having their first child. And I was talking to him today. He became a coaching client of mine today. He's opening up a coffee shop in Rhode Island. He has a background in restaurant management, all that kind of stuff. But what he doesn't have is just overall business knowledge. So he said, Mark, I don't think I'm good at business, this, that, and the other, but I know my business. I want to get, this is my dream. I said, Jared, look, except that you're not good at business, you don't know certain parts of business, which is fine, which is why I'm here. This is why you're hiring me. I tell my clients all of the time, hire me so you don't make the same mistakes that I did. You're paying me to avoid my mistakes and become more efficient on your journey. So when I told Jared today that it's not that he's not good at business, that he just is learning, he's learning business, he felt much better and he felt much more equipped and kind of like a Hercules syndrome to go attack the day.
That's such a good way of expressing that. I love that. You need to write a book about the Hercules syndrome. For real. Your wife needs to start writing right now.
That's awesome. We're thinking about another book called Pivot, but we're working on that. So we'll figure that out.
Yeah, definitely. And just having that shift right there of, wow, I just because I don't know it doesn't mean that's the end. It just means I can learn that. It's such a different way of going about it. Yes, make note, Hercules syndrome book. Julie will endorse. No
kidding. I love it.
Oh, I love it too. Marcus, it's been amazing having you on Ask Me How I Know. I always like to say before, as we wrap things up, is there anything else that maybe we want to make sure we circle back to or touch on before we wrap everything up?
No, I'm just going to say two quotes of mine. One belongs to Aristotle, and then one belongs to, I think it's unknown. I don't know who that belongs to. First one from Aristotle. In times of extreme darkness, focus on the light. If you're having a hard time, it's not the end. It's only the end if you allow it to be the end. Again, 8 years ago, 7.5 to 8 years ago, I'm making what? $8 an hour. I'm pushing a broom. I am working hard. I have my rock bottom moment, and I feel the avalanche theory at its biggest and its best. Well, maybe not its best, at its biggest and its most, this most, you know, cumbersome. That's a better word. Mm-hmm. So then I end up having a mindset shift and getting into my crap, and for 2.5 years being told no, getting my first job, and 5 years later, 25 of our country's top 500 brands have hired me for speaking, coaching, consulting, or more than one or several. If I can do it, why can't you? I'm no better. Like you said earlier, Julia, we're all human. I'm no better. I've learned, and I've learned how to get rid of my ego and be humble, but I'm not better than anybody. So if I can do it, why can't you? And the second one, which is, again, goes to this whole precipice of believing yourself. You have to believe it before you see it. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe it before you see it, 9 times out of 10, it will never come to fruition. So those two quotes by Aristotle, number one, in time of extreme darkness, focus on the light. And then quote two, unknown, focus, you have to believe it before you see it.
I love the quotes. I love how you have, you know, just explained them and everything. And the whole believe it before you see it. Good golly, it's so critical and it's so challenging. What is one tip that you that has allowed you to do that? Because clearly you have that ability to do that.
Take what's in your mind and write it down on paper. If you just have it in your mind, it's a wish or a thought, and you have it written down, it's a goal that you're holding yourself accountable to. So write it down so you can see it, then you can start to believe it.
Mm, I believe it. And behind my green screen, I have a vision board. I always tell people, I'm going to pass this your way because you can share this with your audience, perhaps if you like it. But I always encourage people to have a vision and an accomplishment board. Sure. So mine is kind of split vision one side and things that actually came about on the other. Sometimes it means I'm just moving the picture over. And sometimes it means I'm adding pictures because there are other successes I wasn't expecting. But
I love that. I think that's fantastic.
I have a hard time celebrating the successes because I'm so driven. It's like, I got to go on. I got to get to the next thing or I'm not at it's that. Tough. And it's like,
that's good. Yes. I mean, you need to celebrate for a moment, but I like your mentality. It's a good one to not let your ego get in the way. So there's definitely a lot of benefits to how you are, portraying and kind of carrying on your life, which is great.
Yeah, it works out super great. Marcus, oh my gosh, I could talk forever with you. You're amazing. How do you want listeners to connect with you? What's the best way?
They can go to our website, www.marcusmarcusogden.com, and connect with us. Again, it's marcusogden.com. Go to LinkedIn at Marcus Ogden, Facebook at Marcus Ogden, Instagram at Marcus Ogden, and then Twitter is @Marcus_Ogden. Follow and listen to us on the Levin Marcus Show. Again, we're very eclectic. You know, we have on great guests talking about sports or business or mindset, entrepreneurship. It's really important for us to just give our audience great stories of great human beings with great actions to help people win. And then just shoot us an email, marcus_ogden@yahoo.com, and get in touch with us.
That's awesome. I highly recommend. Make sure you go and connect. It's so important. And if you're listening, you know how passionate I am about this. What you are feeding your mind is so crucial to where you are going in life. And so make sure you connect with Marcus because his content is extraordinary and it will give you good things, good touches into your mind and encouragement and, you know, perspective and vision. And make sure you go check out the podcast because I've no doubt, I can't wait. I haven't checked it out yet, Marcus. And now I have another podcast to add to the lineup because I have no doubt that just a caliber of conversations are going to definitely not just encouraging, but I am already anticipating just the way it would level up my thinking. So yay.
Look forward to, like I said, please, you know, I love what you're about and the whole process. So connect with us and we'll continue to have and move the conversations forward.
Thank you so much. And to all my amazing listeners, please live big, love bigger, and go find your freedom.
Thanks so much for joining me for another episode of Ask Me How I Know. This episode was brought to you by Three Keys Investments. They are dedicated to helping people like you. Yeah, you, my awesome listeners, develop passive income and legacy wealth through multifamily investing. Feel free to check out their website, threekeysinvestments.com, to see if there's an offering that will help your portfolio grow and meet all of your needs. If you haven't already rated, reviewed, subscribed, liked, all of those bells and whistles, I would be absolutely honored if you would do that for Ask Me How I Know. Thanks again, and go make it a great day.